Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Boomer and the Vape Show, giving voice to 78 million boomers from coast to coast and border to border. Each day we have a different guest and a different topic. Our guests always have a nugget or two for anyone, regardless of where you are. We hope you enjoy the relaxed conversational style of the show. Nothing fancy, just boomers sitting around the table talking about stuff. Now, here are the Boomer and the Vape, Pete Peters and Deborah Brown.
On Blog Talk Radio. It's Thursday, November 19th, 2010. We are broadcasting from the Boomer and the Babe Enterprise Studio in Phoenix, Arizona, although today we've moved our studio out to the Sun City Homeowners Association, and we're going to be talking a little bit about what's going on out here for their elections, and we're going to be talking to some of those candidates as well. And we'll be getting to our guests in a minute, but before we do, I want to invite everybody, all of our listeners, to go to our website at www.boomerandthebabe.com, sign up for our free online magazine, and take a little tour around the site to see everything else that the Boomer and the Babe Enterprises are involved in. And I'm Pete Peters, and Deborah Brown is off, as we say, on assignment. She's off doing some educational improvement for the weekend, so we'll have her back again next week, of course. Today's guest is going to be Matt Bunk as soon as he shows up from the Arizona Capital Times. And in the meantime, I have a gentleman here who is, I guess, the director of
General Manager
of the Sun City Homeowners Association. His name is Bill Senmikloshi. And did I pronounce that right?
That's pretty good.
A-. Well, you gave it to me phonetically, so that's the best I can do, I guess. And Bill is the general manager, as he said, and we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on here today, other than the elections. You've got a little expo going, so welcome to the Boomer to Babe Show, Bill. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you for the invitation.
Well, we're glad to have you. Tell us a little bit about the Homeowners Association for starters. What is it that the Homeowners Association does? A little bit of, is it mandatory, so on and so forth, and how it's involved in the community.
Sun City is very unique in a couple of respects. One, we're probably one of the largest homeowner associations in the United States. We have almost 30,000 residents, 47,000-plus people. What makes it unique is that our membership to our homeowner association is $15 a year. It's voluntary, but compliance by everybody, whether you're a member or not, is mandatory. We do more than enforce our deed restrictions and the age restrictions. We also instituted a couple of programs. We had the community intervention program to combat vacant properties or people that are gone for the summertime. We also have the financial assistance program. It's a way for us to give back to the community because we have people living at Sun City that have been here since the early 60s that are living at or below the poverty level. We have several programs, free notary services, vendor referral plot plans. We have a list of about 20 things we offer for our members.
So if somebody's a member, I know that you've got quite a vendor list, vendor members, I guess you would call them.
Yes.
And if somebody wants to come in and avail themselves of your member list, if they're doing home improvements or something along those lines, do they have to be a member to access that list?
Yes. In order to access any of our free services, you do have to be a member of the Sun City Homeowners Association. We currently have 141 different vendors in 600 different categories, going from simple handymen and landscape people all the way to licensed contractors, plumbers, and electricians. Currently, you can access this through our website. You can come in and access it through our people here, one of our staff. But we're also going to expand these services in about 6 months to make even more accessible to our member residents.
So when you have all these vendors that are out here today, I don't know, it looks like maybe you have 20 or so vendors out here in your lot. Are all of these vendors also members of your vendor services group?
Yeah, we have 31 vendors on site today. Because this is our first year organizing this, we made some mistakes a little bit in the logistics. We actually could have had more. We had 15 on standby in case there was any cancellations, and we turned down about 20 people. So I anticipate next year that we're actually going to have probably closer to 50 vendors, and it'll be better advertised so we can draw in a good crowd for our vendors.
Now, today is also Election Day here in, at the Homeowners Association. It is today and tomorrow. Is that correct, that they, people can come in and vote?
Yes, our elections are today from 9 o'clock this morning till 3 o'clock this afternoon. And on Saturday, there will be no vendor fair on Saturday, but we'll be doing elections from 9 o'clock in the morning till noon.
9 to noon on Saturday, so get out and vote. Unlike Chicago, we're not voting early and often. We're just voting early.
Yeah, and actually we did something new this year. We did absentee ballots, and we had a good response to absentee ballots. We picked up about 50 in our first attempt.
How many people typically would vote in this election?
It's kind of sad. Out of 9,000 members that we have, we're hoping to get about 800 to 1,000 members voting today.
So approximately 10% of the membership decides the future of 100% of Sun City as far as the association activities are concerned.
Yes, and what's interesting, actually our voting results and percentages are higher than the recreation centers in Sun City. You know, they have 40,000 available voters, and they're hoping to get 2,000, and that would be a good turnout for them. So we do actually have a higher turnout than some other organizations.
Now, what typically the candidates that are running for these positions, what, you have five candidates and three positions, is that correct this year?
Yes. Every year we have three people go off the board, and so every year we have a three-year, a two-year, and a one-year term. And so this year we have five candidates running for three positions.
So there's going to be a three-year term, a two-year term, and a one-year term filled this weekend?
Yes.
And how is it determined who gets the three, the two, and the one?
Highest vote getter gets a three-year term. The second highest vote getter gets a two-year term, and the lowest vote getter gets the one-year term.
Real simple.
Real simple.
All right. What do you anticipate from the candidates? I mean, how do you campaign for this position, or do you campaign, or you just put your name out there, or how does it work?
Some people have done some campaigning. They've gone door to door. We put their bios and what their goals, what they would like to see happen in the Sun City Homeowner Association to improve the community. Really, any campaigning is up to them. We don't help them with the campaigning part of it. But last year we had a really good results with the members actually went door to door, did some ads in the papers. This year it was mostly done through the newspapers. I don't know what else they may have done to promote their candidacy.
So there, our guest Matt just got here. That's good. I'm glad he made it. So we're gonna talk to Matt here for a little while. Bill, thank you very much for visiting with us. Good luck on your day today and your election. And if you could start kind of rounding up the candidates for us, I'd appreciate it. The ones that are here, and when we're wrapping up with Matt, then we'll get them over here to say hi to us.
Okay, thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Take care.
Come on in, Matt. Have a seat over here. We'll put you in the hot seat now. I know we were talking about some Arizona politics that you and I were talking about before, and I'm glad you made it. And we were supposed to have one of the candidates is also for the Sun City Homeowners Association, is also for the a candidate for the board here. Unfortunately, he's apparently being indoctrinated down there at the State House today. So he got called down there. So
right.
I'm not going to get into publicizing who it is or whatever, but nonetheless, he's not here, and that's a shame because I was hoping to speak to him. But what's going on in the State House since the election? Is it still as goofy as it was before the election?
Oh, it's pretty goofy. A lot of, you know, meetings behind closed doors going on right now. People are trying to maneuver, get ready, kind of form their factions for next year, lay out their agendas, make sure they know who's on their side, who's not. And there's about 35 freshman lawmakers coming in. We have 90 lawmakers statewide, and 35 of them are going to be coming in fresh, basically. So there's a lot of budget stuff that they're going to have to get caught up on really quick, and I assume that a lot of those freshmen are running around like chickens with their heads cut off, trying to talk to those veterans and learn as much as they can right now about what's going on. They know they're going to have to deal with immigration right away. They know they're going to have to deal with this massive budget deficit where we're looking at another $1 billion that we're going to have to, you know, come up with to balance the budget. So, you know, there's just a lot of stuff for these guys to be trying to figure out right now. Some of those freshmen that are coming in have been in the legislature before. Like, there's Eddie Farnsworth, who actually, you know, left the legislature in 2008 when he lost an election for state Senate. He's back now. So we're counting him as a freshman, although he's got some experience.
He knows where the bones are.
He knows where the bones are. Absolutely. He used to be leadership in the house. So he's a freshman, but it's not really, you know, all things are not equal, definitely with him. But there's 23, I believe, absolute true freshmen, first-time lawmakers coming in. So it's still going to be a big challenge for those guys.
You and I have discussed on previous shows the fact that the freshman lawmakers coming in are pretty much, if not directly told, but indirectly told, to keep your mouth shut, your head down, and just vote the way we tell you to vote, and do what we tell you to do. Is that going to be the case this time, do you think?
Yes, always that's the case. I mean, it's put a lot nicer than the way Pete just laid it out, but that's basically what they're told. Yeah, you know, it's you know, they're basically kind of they brought in the first couple of days and said, hey, listen, I know you've got a lot of ideas, but it takes time to figure out how stuff works down here. So why don't you do this? Why don't you, you know, follow me around for a little while? You know, learn the ropes. I'll teach you how things go around here. And then, you know, when the time comes and you're ready, then we'll drop your legislation and we'll see how it goes, you know, and I'll help you out with that. But for now, just kind of, you know, just follow me around for a little while. I'll mentor you. And so that's what you end up getting. It's a very cordial, nice-sounding thing. But, yes, they're saying, we don't want your input really right now. We just want you to do what you're told. So you're right. That's what they're saying.
And you're a Republican, and we got a Republican majority, and we thank you for being a Republican, and now do what all good Republicans do, and we're going to tell you what good Republicans do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're good Republicans. Watch what we do
and
mimic it, and then you'll be in good shape down
here. Yeah. And as always the case, of course, that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. So I guess seeing as how we still have even a more of a plurality for the Republicans, we really can't really, I would imagine, not expect too much different.
No, I mean, I wouldn't expect much different. You may expect them to be even more aggressive with the agenda that they're going to push this year than they had been in the past. And I'm not sure that voters were actually telling, yeah, I'm not sure the message from voters on November 2nd was that, hey, we want Republicans to do whatever they want. I think their message was we're really frustrated with, you know, Democrats nationwide. That's trickling down to home a little bit here. It affected the ballots here. With a lot of folks trying to send more Republicans out to Congress, I think, is the main goal for a lot of the people in the state. They're frustrated with national Democrats. They want to put the handcuffs on Barack Obama to some extent. And so, you know, they all came out to vote in this big national wave, and I think that's largely why you saw more Republicans gaining seats in the legislature, you know, kind of benefiting from this national wave, of course. But, yeah, they may misinterpret this mandate from the voters and try to overstep a little bit, especially when you've got leaders, and this is actually something that we may want to spend some time talking about if you're interested. We have some leaders coming in here who may be more aggressive and dominating than, you know, we've had people like Bob Burns recently in the Senate. He was the Senate president the last legislative session. Many people viewed him as kind of a centralizing power around himself, sort of, so he could kind of control what was going on, maybe somewhat of a controlling leader, at least in some respects. And now we're going to have somebody who is going to make Bob Burns look like a flower child or something like that in there, because Senator Pierce is absolutely going to dominate everybody around him, I believe. He's completely right now, he's got more power than he's ever had. He's coming in as Senate president. He's named himself chairman of the Rules Committee, which is a very powerful committee. Basically, all legislation has to go through the Rules Committee before it's passed. So he has done some of the things that Bob Burns has done, because Burns did the same thing, named himself Rules Committee chair. But Russell Pierce has a much more aggressive agenda, an individual agenda than Bob Burns did. And what you're going to see probably is Russell Pierce maybe testing the governor a little bit to see if maybe test who's really in charge of Arizona and who's going to set policy, who's going to be the leader in policy decision making here in the next year. Brewer, I mean, already right after the election, you had Russell Pierce coming out and saying, well, you know, this governor, you know, I'm sort of paraphrasing for Senator Pierce, but he basically said, you know, the governor, she's, you know, benefited from that S-1070 that I wrote and I pushed through, and I've been pushing that bill for years and years, and she came in at a good time and signed it, and I thank her for that. It's a good thing she did, because that's kind of why she's governor right now. You know, sort of like, you know, maybe she owes me a little bit. I kind of made this happen. there's something to what Pierce is saying. She was running third or fourth in the polls when she signed S-1070, so, you know, she got much more popular after that. But him trying to, you know, remind her about that may not sit well, and it didn't sit well with the governor's staff. They came back right away and said, well, you know, Russell Pierce doesn't really play well with others, and that's why Governor Brewer's the governor. That's why Russell Pierce will never be governor. So this is these words are some things with these Republican leaders. These words are signaling to us that there's going to be some friction. And the Capitol insiders, lobbyists, and all the people that run around down there, they're expecting an epic power struggle this year, and it could be really fun to watch for as a media person. But as an Arizona resident, we may run into some gridlock here that on big things like the economy and everything else that people want to see some action. So
I just don't see how they can. They've had a majority down there. You and I have discussed for what 10, 20, 30 years, or however long it's been. I don't know. And all of a sudden now they're all full of themselves on top of having a larger majority. I just don't understand how we can expect to see anything beneficial to the citizenry of this state if they're going to keep playing these goofy games. They can't even agree amongst themselves as a Republican Party. I mean, and that is also a microcosm of what's going on in Washington, since all these teabag people got in there in Washington. Now those Republicans are fighting amongst themselves too. It certainly changed the way of the world as regards politics. There's not even any more civility involved.
No.
I mean, it used to be that the more you complimented somebody, that was a question of the fact that that was an indication of how much distaste you had for them.
Right.
They don't even go to that anymore. They just say, you are a real SOB, and I don't care who knows it, and I'm saying it.
It's gotten almost to that point. You know, I was at a pretty prestigious dinner last night with a bunch of politicians around. It was the Goldwater's annual dinner, Goldwater Institute's annual dinner. And I was talking to some of the lobbyists there, and they were saying the same things. You know, they said, you know, it's funny because we can run around. He was telling me a story. One of these top-notch consultant in the state, Republican consultant, was telling me a story about how he was basically roommates with another top-notch Democratic strategist, and they became really fast friends, and were absolute friends, and they disagreed on everything. Where is that? You know, that's gone. I mean, it happens behind the scenes with lobbyists and different things, but it's gone in the legislature. I mean, almost completely. And I'm wondering if it's going to come back a little bit this year. Republicans mainly have no reason from a strategic standpoint to have Democrats involved in any way, shape, or form. There's only 9 Democrats in the Senate, and there's going to be 20 Democrats in the House, I believe. Republicans have a supermajority, a veto-proof majority, which adds to Pierce's power when he's dealing with, you know, kind of dueling it out with the governor. I absolutely think we're going to be in a situation where if the Republicans decide to allow Democrats to the table, it may be more out of pity and maybe more out of PR for them than anything else, because Democrats certainly are not going to be driving the agenda.
They're going to be allowed to have their seat.
They will sit there, yes.
Exactly.
And beyond that, we're not sure what they're going to do.
You mentioned SB was 1070, is that what it is?
Yeah.
And Russell Pierce's involvement in that. I just heard recently, within the last couple of days, that there is a huge loss in revenue for the state of Arizona because of SB 1070. I think the number I heard was 1.9 million, or was it billion?
It was probably, I would imagine statewide, it was probably billion.
A lot of tourism dollars are not coming to the state because of that one particular item that has been foisted upon the state of Arizona and the tourism department and all people involved. And if they're looking for balancing budgets, don't they think that they should do something that's a little more thought to it before they go ahead and pass these things?
Well, I think their view of it was this was collateral damage, and they expected maybe a little collateral damage. Their view is that long term, and I'm not saying this is based on fact, I'm saying it's their view. Their view is that Republicans believe that, and Russell Pierce absolutely believes that, the more illegal immigrants we can drive out of the state, the less we will have to pay in terms of benefits for them. And by benefits, that might be too loose a word to use. That's the way Russell Pierce would describe it. But what we're talking about is here is they're using our streets, they're using our schools, and they're using our healthcare systems. And so He figures, and some people in the legislature agree that, you know, the more we can get these folks out of our state, the less the state will actually have to spend on some of these services, picking up on some of these services. And, yeah, there's going to be some damage to the economy, but it'll be in the long run a better thing is what their thought process is. We have yet to see it. There's so many studies running around, and that's what it bothers you, because you'll see a study like this. You'll see studies saying, you know, this is the number of Hispanic people who have left Arizona since S-1070 started. Well, how do they, you know, so much of this is based on, you know, statistical, you know, formulas that they're using, less on reality. And you have stats both ways. You know, one of them saying, here's how much we're going to save because they're leaving, and the other one saying, here's how much the economy is suffering because of it. I think probably both are true to some extent. Which one's more dominant, I have no idea. I don't know if we're losing more or gaining more. But, I'm not sure that even matters at this point in the political process. They're not considering that part of it, I don't think. I don't see that playing into it very much. The tourism industry, we'll see how much they lobby down here against the next round of immigration bills that are going to be coming up. I expect it won't just be tourism lobbying against this next round of things. We've heard the business community at large, the major business owners and major business associations, lobbying associations, trade groups. They're coming out against Russell Pierce, his plans for this coming year, which involve more immigration legislation. We've talked about it before on the show. I think he's trying to end the practice of giving citizenship to those who are born in the country if their parents are illegal immigrants, which is a departure from Pierce's previous immigration laws, immigration proposals. In the past, he's sort of said, you know, hey, this is the law already. We're not, you know, these people are not following the law. All we're doing is enforcing the law. And if the feds won't do it, state needs a law to do it themselves. Now Russell Pierce is going out and challenging the longstanding interpretation of the U.S. Constitution by trying to say that, you know, if you're not born on U.S. soil, if you're born on U.S. soil, you shouldn't be a citizen. I think that the business community says this has just gone too far. And I think you're going to see the tourism industry and the business community coalesce around opposition to Russell Pierce's proposals this coming year.
Well, but based on that, if that is indeed the criteria, only Native Americans are the only true citizens, and all of us have to get out of Dodge.
Well, yes, but you know, that's the thing. Russell has not, or Senator Pierce has not explained exactly who would be impacted by this. There's so many questions. I mean, if one parent is a citizen and the other one isn't, you know, how is he going to write this law? I mean, does it affect that couple's children? You know, do both parents have to be illegal immigrants if their children are born here to deny them citizenship? There's just too many questions. He hasn't drafted the law. He just keeps talking about it. And right now, it's just scaring people, I think, that, you know, the business community especially. And that's another thing that's playing into this whole power struggle. The business community has been, and Jan Brewer have been very tight. They're her major support network, basically, and have been. And they're definitely going to be aligning with her to try to, you know, veto or block Russell Pierce's immigration legislation coming up. And she's not saying what she would do with it. She's kind of on the fence and testing the winds, but. You know, with the business community in her corner and having her ear and them being opposed to some of this immigration legislation that Pierce wants to bring forward, I expect they're going to put a lot of pressure on her to veto this stuff.
Well, that's something that is the one thing that we can count on Jan Brewer to do, and that is to say nothing and not be around where people are going to ask her hard questions, because that is her stock in trade. That was her stock in trade when she was the appointed governor, and that was her stock in trade when she was running for governor. And why would things change now? I mean, what would change it now?
No, you know, she there. You might think that, okay, she's, oh gosh, she's gonna be mad if I get this wrong, but I think she's, I'm gonna go low because I don't want to offend her. I think she's 65, 66 years old. Goodness sake, she's gonna be upset if she hears me. Anyways. What I'm saying is she doesn't have a long political future ahead of her, probably. She's already expired one of her terms that she's eligible for because she filled in for, you know, Napolitano midway through, and then now she's been elected to this, her second term as governor, and she's you know, she could run for Congress after that, but she's going to be up there in years. She doesn't have a political future per se beyond what she's doing right now, governor for the next 4 years, and so I she could just kind of do what she wanted to do. Really, she doesn't need to let the political pressures play on her as much as she did in the past when she wanted to be reelected. So she could surprise us. She might be a little more of an independent thinker than we saw in the past, but the one common uniting factor between her first term and her second is that the people that are around her, Chuck Coughlin, Doug Cole, these people are her top advisors, very close confidants, and those folks know political strategy inside and out, and they're going to be driving a lot of the decisions that she makes. So it's right now, it makes sense that she's sitting on the sidelines from their perspective. It's a good political move to do that, but it's the voters are sitting out here not knowing exactly what to expect from her, and that's not a good thing. I expect that when the time comes, she will come out against this thing, and she's going to play her cards, you know, close to the vest until that moment arrives.
She's going to have to weigh in sooner or later.
At some point. She will have to at some point. She may let the legislature wrangle this thing around for, you know, 2-3 months before she finally decides to say something about it, and that's a possibility. But she may hint. I believe you're going to see some signals from the governor, maybe trying to persuade them to concentrate on other things. And if we see some of those things happening, you know, that may be a signal that you know, she intends to do other things than pass Russell Pierce's legislation.
Well, Russell Pierce is certainly getting himself quite a reputation. I guess it's a reputation that he wants. I mean, he's the one that's doing it. But in some circles, I would imagine, but I don't even know where the circles would be, it's a bit of a bully.
It's exactly, we wrote a story this week in the Capital Times that actually said that exact thing, and not us, but our, you know, the people who know Russell Pierce and have worked with Russell Pierce. That's how they describe him. And many of them have respect for him, and many of them like him as a person, but when it comes to some of the things that Russell Pierce gets excited about, like immigration laws, he gets very, very feverish almost about the way he approaches, you know, people in trying to gain their support for those types of things. And he's retaliated against people politically who oppose him. And so for those reasons, you know, he is in many ways a political bully in those regards. And again, I mean, if you talk to Russell Pierce in the street, he's a nice man. He really is. But you start getting him going on immigration and some of these other things, and he's a true believer, and his whole ideology is built around what he is doing right now. And it's hard to anybody who disagrees with him is just not as smart as him, according to the, you know, in his way of thinking. And they just don't know what he knows. Otherwise, there's no way they'd be disagreeing with him right now. That's kind of the way he approaches that, and that's hard to deal with when you're a colleague and basically a peer of Russell Pierce's. You have to understand that about him when you're talking with him. So.
Do you see any consensus coming down the pike on any other items aside from this immigration stuff? I mean, are they going to be fighting amongst themselves for consensus on everything?
They're not going to fight on everything, but there is one other thing. This is very interesting for businesses out there and individuals. Tax cuts have been a major, you know, focus. I mean, there's, you know, the discussion last year about, you know, we need to pull ourselves out of the recession. The economy is suffering in Arizona in particular. It's worse here than many other states, and we need to do something about it. Our tax structure is old and antiquated. Let's fix it. Well, their solution, Republican solution last year that was brought forward, was to lower business taxes and corporate taxes considerably. It would have been phased in. The tax cuts wouldn't have all occurred in the same year. It would have happened over the next three or four years, I believe, maybe the next 5 years. But there were significant tax cuts, and the idea was to drive business growth, and maybe that would turn around and these businesses would create more jobs as a result of it, which has been the big problem for Arizona, is the unemployment rate. So that thing the Republicans couldn't agree on that, whether that should be the way to go forward, because cutting taxes in the middle of a budget crisis makes it more difficult on state services and everything else out there. Schools would have to take bigger cuts, things like that. So what you really run into is It's they can't agree on it. They didn't agree on it last year, and Jan Brewer had her own ideas about economic development, and basically that bill got killed and stalled. This year we're going to come back. We're going to see some more things like that. But right now the big question is, can we afford to do tax cuts this year? And so I kind of rambled to get into the point here, but the consensus now, even among Republicans who were very hawkish about tax cuts last year, is that we can't afford it right now. You're probably going to see some bill come forward or some legislation come forward that includes tax cuts, and it's probably going to be a pretty comprehensive big bill. You're going to see it's going to make headlines, I'm sure. But what it's going to be is it's going to be a delayed tax cut. It's going to be triggered by something. It's either going to be triggered by economic recovery. You know, there will be different measurements to gauge economic recovery, and once we've gotten to this point, okay, we can phase in some tax cuts. And then once we recover some more, okay, we phase in some more tax cuts. That's one plan. The other plan is to just say, okay, we're going to pass tax cuts, but they're going to go into effect in 2013. Some more will go into 2015. Some more will go in 2017. The big debate you're going to see this year, I think, probably among the Republican Party, and Democrats are going to say, oh, no, 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 we can't do this at all. So you're going to, all Democrats are going to vote against this probably.
Well, that's only 9 votes.
It's only 9 votes, so it doesn't matter. At least in the Senate. But you're going to have, you know, Republicans are going to be split on should we tie this stuff to economic benchmarks, the tax cuts, should we make them commensurate with economic benchmarks, or should we just set a date in the future? But there's pretty wide agreement that no tax cuts are going to actually take place this year. So relief for businesses and perhaps individuals out there is probably a couple of years down the road.
What about... And I've seen this happen in a community over in Southern California that was developing a new portion of their city, and they were trying to lure in pharmaceutical companies, and it was a big heated thing that the city was giving away the ranch with regard to infrastructure and building the roads and doing all those things and making it easy for these businesses to come in, knowing full well that down the road they're going to have that tax base.
Right.
Now, is there anything like that happening in the state of Arizona? I mean, we've talked about before the fact that solar, where else would there be solar available and as much sunshine available other than Arizona? And I don't know why we are not actively, I mean, just laying down for these people to bring your solar business, your solar manufacturing here. We've got people ready to work. We've got all kinds of land. We've got all the infrastructure as far as highways for delivery and train tracks for delivery. And why in the world would we not be going after that just tooth and nail, fighting every other possible state or municipality to try to get that in here? Why aren't they putting that really, really on top of the agenda?
Well, I'll speak to the whole idea of like the incentives that you're talking about first of all, and then we can talk about solar because that's actually a pretty interesting point. And there is something, some things are moving on solar, but it's more of a haphazard effort by individuals rather than a statewide comprehensive movement. What we have right now, though, in terms of philosophy on business incentives, is there's a faction of people that believe if you're going to give an incentive, make it an incentive that would be able, anybody out there with a business would be able to qualify for, rather than a targeted incentive that would maybe benefit a certain industry or a certain sector of an industry. California, for instance, will go all out to try to lure technology companies, and during the early part of this decade, they came after biotechnology companies with gusto and were giving them tax breaks all over just to set up. It almost cost these businesses nothing to set up huge manufacturing, you know, operations in California and other states. Well, Arizona has kind of had this feeling that, you know, why should government be subsidizing business is the way they're looking at it. And it's a valid point of view from my perspective, except for the fact that when you look around and the reality is that 48 other states are doing this, and you're the only one not, okay, yeah, well, why should they be doing it? That's a whole philosophical argument that you can have, but the fact of the matter is the market is driving it, and you got a market where, you know, 40-some-odd other states are giving them incentives. If you're a business, where are you going to go? You know, and they're not going after, you know, some retail, low-paying job kind of business owners. They're going after technology companies and specifically very targeted efforts to bring specific kinds of companies in. And Arizona just has never done that, and part of it is the philosophy is that, you know, it's unfair. If we're going to give an incentive. Let's just make it in lower taxes for everybody. And that way, no matter what kind of business you are, you benefit, and the government isn't playing favorites. Well, the problem is, yeah, okay, Arizona's got a lot of that. Look around and see the urban sprawl we've got in some places where it's just retail upon retail upon retail. Yeah, okay, well, maybe that works, but, you know, now they're all being closed in the recession, you know. In the boom times, that's great, but, you know, what happens during the down times, and you're seeing it. There's shops closed all over the place, and even when they are operating, you got $5 an hour, you know, whatever minimum wage is these days, $7 an hour jobs. It's a lot different than bringing in, you know, high-tech, you know, companies that are going to be paying six figures to their top people. And so that's been what's holding up a lot of that stuff, really, is this philosophy that we shouldn't be doing that kind of thing. And a separate point, and I apologize, I'm rambling, but you asked a really good question. And that, you know, cities across Arizona are doing this too. Cities across Arizona are coming in, offering incentives, trying to bring in all kinds of different developments. Problem is that, you know, they're limited by the state constitution on what they can actually do. They have to show that there's a measurable public benefit to doing what they're doing. In other words, parking garages that the public can use that would be built along with whatever development that they're trying to put in, that would be viewed as a public benefit. Okay, so the Constitution allows kinds of incentives for those types of things. But we've actually had other groups like the Goldwater Institute. I mentioned I was at their dinner last night. They sued the City of Phoenix for doing exactly that. The City of Phoenix brought in a large shopping mall, the City North Project. And the Goldwater Institute sued and said, you can't give them the kind of incentives that you're giving them. That's against the state constitution. And basically won. And Phoenix had to, it was declared basically unconstitutional what Phoenix had done. So it's very difficult for cities to do the kinds of things that we're talking about in terms of incentives, because there's restrictions on it and they're scared of getting sued. You know, the state hasn't done that sort of thing just because there's an ideological issue with playing favorites with certain targeted incentives. Tax cuts is their solution. That's what they're going to keep pushing for. That's what we're going to see this year too. Now, I swear I will not talk anymore about this anymore, but on solar, the governor is actually doing some stuff on trying to bring some solar companies in here. Little by little, she kind of goes out, talks to different, you know, large solar companies, and she's been announcing different projects that are bringing some pretty heavy jobs into Arizona. You know, the problem is as fast as she's bringing in these solar companies, other companies are closing up, and you know, we're still massively in stuck in this recession while the country's coming out of it. We're just not. So we're not seeing.
There's no net gain.
There's no net gain by any of it. But there are individual efforts like that, like the governor's efforts to bring in solar.
Well, that's just one thing that comes to my mind. I mean, I'm sure there may be others along the way that I for one just don't pay any attention to or whatever. But I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of the theory of it. It just seems to me that when we need a bigger tax base, and if we have companies that can't afford to pay a bigger tax base because of economic conditions, well, then maybe what we need is more companies. You know, it's pretty simple as far as I'm concerned. I'm not an economist, but I sometimes try to play one on the radio. But it seems to me that there is a basic solution, and it's the same as my business. If people aren't buying my product at $100, I need to get it down to $50. Then I got to go sell a hell of a lot more of them. But at least I'm selling something.
Right.
And I think that's kind of the way they have to look at it in the State House and Governor Brewer and whoever. But they're certainly, in my opinion, this is my opinion, Ginger, in my opinion, they're not making it. They're not easy to do business with. There was a friend of mine that worked for a major trucking company, and that was their slogan, that we are easy to do business with. And I don't see that in the state of Arizona currently.
Yeah. Right, and that's exactly the issue. You know, the definition of not easy to do business with is something that, you know, Republicans are trying to deal with too. You know, and they're doing it in their own fancy way, where, you know, it's regulation in their mind, state regulations that makes things difficult for businesses here in Arizona, and so they're trying to eliminate some of the regulations that they think are in the way. But at the same time, they're doing things like the you know, SB 1070, which is kind of you know, balancing that out by some negative effects too on the economy. So right now it's an ideological battle, and an ideology is playing into our economic development policy, and that's maybe where Arizona is got some real problems, is instead of looking at things from a practical, sensible viewpoint on how what's working for other places, they're trying to choose an ideological strategy, choose an ideological, they're trying to choose a way forward and a way out of this recession to benefit the economy, and they're trying to fit whatever solution that they're coming up with into their ideology, and rather than just kind of putting the whole political stuff aside and trying to deal with some of the things that they need to deal with.
When I was a kid, that was called have your cake and eat it too.
That's right. That's right.
That's what it was called. Well, we have somebody joining us, Matt James King. He is one of the candidates for the Sun City Homeowners Association Board of Directors.
Sir.
James, this is Matt Bunke. He's Capital Times Managing Editor. And we did this last year. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but we had Matt here, and we talked Arizona politics, as he and I do from time to time. And we also talked to many of the candidates. So welcome to the Boomer and the Babe Show.
Thank you.
First of all, tell us a little bit about James King, and what is, how long has James King been in Sun City, and where'd you come from? Where do you hail from?
My mother.
Very good.
I'm from Michigan originally.
Hey, Michigan, go blue, huh?
Yeah.
Or are you a State fan?
Well, I'm both. Blue is on top. Mostly blue.
Good.
Yeah, I used to go to Notre Dame to watch them play Notre Dame because it was closer than Ypsilanti.
Yeah, there you go.
Ann Arbor. But I came down here in 88 originally, and I met my wife, and she had a home up in Colorado. She was down to take care of her mother, and her mother had a stroke, and we came back down here in 95 and helped take care of her dad at the time. And he recently passed, so we inherited the house. And I've been here 15 years this time in Sun City.
So what prompted you to run for the Sun City Homeowners Association Board?
Because I've never done it before. I got on the board of the properties. And I got Mountain View. I go down and I basically inspect the building and property and see what's going on. And somebody said, why don't I go for this too? And the only board I've ever been on before was a surfboard, so I just thought I'd try something different and put some new ideas in.
Well, what kind of new ideas do you have?
Well, some of them are old, but I want to refresh them, like the speed bumps, you know, in some areas, try to convince county, go ahead and let us do it. Because some areas of Sun City, they're still running 40 and 60 miles an hour in the 25. Something's got to be done because they're not going to listen.
Well, I keep saying I'm going to throw pillows out in front of cars over on Country Club Drive where I live and see if we can slow them down a little.
Or nails.
Or nails, boards with nails. Yeah, that's not a bad idea either. But beyond that, I'm going to guess that you're probably a baby boomer.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
I'm the late edge of the baby boom, 53, so.
Okay.
Born in 53.
Well, there's a whole bunch of baby boomers moving into Sun City.
Yep.
And baby boomers nowadays have obviously different needs than our parents had, your parents had, my parents had.
Absolutely.
So what do you think that the Sun City Homeowners Association can do to accommodate some of the changing needs and lifestyles of some of these boomers who are still working? And what are some things that they might be able to?
We can listen to what they want, and then, you know, try to abide by that, and see if we can work something out with them, not against them. We might have to change some of the CCNRs.
Right. Right.
You know, see what happens. Like I said, I'm new at this, but I'm willing to work into it and see what I can.
Well, being the newbie might
help.
Might be beneficial at some level. Matt, do you have anything you want to?
Well, no, I mean, you hit on it, really. Beyond the speed bumps, and I'm curious, just because I don't spend time, I'm from the East Valley, so I don't get over here very often. What are some of the other issues that you guys deal with? There's obviously the traffic things. I heard that last year was one of the major issues, too.
Lining the streets. Most of it deals back to county. Like 103rd south of Alabama, it's not striped. I mean, for the north and south lanes, but people, it's so wide, people treat that as two lanes. And it's got to be, you got to do some kind of striping under so people know that it is just one lane. What throws it off is on Sun City Boulevard in Alabama, they've got a stop sign in the middle, so it looks like there's two lanes there.
Oh,
so that's
right.
Got to be gotten rid of.
Right,
so,
right.
But some of these CCNRs have to be enforced too, because it reminded me, I live on Quail Run Golf Course, and a guy built a garage, and nobody ever said a word to him about it, and it's just detached from the house, and it's not supposed to be.
Well, I understand there are certain lots in Sun City that that is within the purview of, that they can do that based on some locations. As,
not that I'm aware of.
I thought that was the case, because I know there's one over on, what is it? I think it's maybe Lindgren or whatever, right by the post office there on Bell.
Uh-oh, now you just got somebody in trouble over there.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Well, it was permitted. It was built.
Well, they may have given it. I can't think of the word right now, but
a variance of
a
some
variance.
Sort.
Thank
yeah.
you. They may
yeah.
have given him a variance. I mean, they may have given this guy a variance. I don't know.
Right, right.
But that's why when I get on the board, I can learn some of this stuff and see who does get a
Absolutely.
Variance.
Absolutely. I would love to see you get double yellow stripes down Country Club Drive. I mean, that would be just wonderful. Because, I mean, I'm trying to make a left turn into my driveway, and somebody could pass me on the left, just, even with my turn signal on,
yeah.
they could pass me on the left just as soon as not. At least they'd be wrong if they ran
into see, at least you paid for that option to have your turn signal. A lot of people couldn't afford that option. So
oh, yeah, that turn signals are an option. Anything else?
No,
on your
just,
mind,
like I
Jim?
Said, I'm just trying to bring some fresh blood and some new ideas. That's all I'm trying to do.
Well, that's probably a good thing. Well, welcome to Sun City. I'm glad you're here.
You've been here 15 years.
Yeah, well,
I've
not been here that long, but I've been in Arizona for a good number of years.
We put up with the summer for this.
That's exactly right, for a day like today. Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, thanks for stopping by and visiting with us. I appreciate it. And good luck in your election.
Thank you.
If you're going to vote for yourself,
make it
a bullet vote so nobody else gets any votes. Very good.
Got it covered.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Nice to meet you, James.
Same here. Thank you.
Thanks again.
Well,
send the next candidate in here, if you would. Talk about politics being local. It can't get much more local than this.
Absolutely not. This is very local.
It's always fun to listen to these people come with or without experiences, where they've been, what they haven't been, and this could be their very first attempt at doing something. So,
yeah,
more power to them. Glad to have them here.
That's right.
I have to share an interesting story.
Yes,
with
ma'am.
You.
This is Kay Bush.
I was a candidate and was elected last year at this
yes.
time. And I sat right here and did an interview with you.
Right.
And then somebody told me I could see it on my Twitter, so I did. I had no idea that it was video. I thought it was. It's an audio piece. And I turn around, it's like, there I am, and I'm talking with my hands, like, always doing hell of a pointed.
Well, this is just audio today.
Hi.
No video.
Hey,
hi, Dave. Nice to meet you. I'm Matt from the Arizona
Hi.
Capital Times.
Dave, nice to meet you.
Dave.
Massive.
Massive.
You must have done something wrong.
Massive done something. Well, you don't want to admit it here.
I didn't say that.
Dave, what is it? What's your background? Where do you hail from? What have you?
I was born in Paterson, New Jersey, which is northern New Jersey.
Okay.
Lived permanently in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware until 4 years ago. I moved here to Sun City. First time I was in Sun City was in 1980 on business. And it was one of the choices I had when I retired. I'm divorced, have two children, three grandchildren. I've been active in various organizations all of my life. My educational background is biochemistry and business. I ran food processing plants. I had my own computer business for 11 years. And I decided I had enough and retired. And here I am.
There you go.
Well, I got to ask you, if you're from New Jersey, I just was at a dinner last night where your home state's governor, Chris Christie, was there, and he gave a wonderful speech. Of course, if you're Republican, you like the speech more than if you were a Democrat in the room. But he gave an awesome speech. It was very good. He's an entertaining guy, nonetheless,
yes.
whether you agree with him or not. I got to ask you. So, okay, before we had, what was it, Corzine was the governor?
Corzine,
before
yeah.
Corzine. Corzine, Christie, polar opposites. Which guy, this is my version of a hardball question for a Sun City Homeowners Association
okay.
board candidate. Which one of those guys do you associate with more? Which one do you think is the right? Obviously, we had Corzine was a very, very liberal
I am very much more associated with Chris Christie and his philosophy. I'll be honest, till a number of years ago, I was a Democrat all my life. And I finally, having had the time to do my research, figured out I was a dyed-in-the-wool conservative. Because even as a Democrat, I was not happy with what was going on. I found it outrageous that the salaries of teachers would keep going up and up and up and up, and kids would be flunking out left and right. So to me, having somebody responsible and accountable is more important than anything else, no matter what you do.
Good answer. And that's actually...
Well, thank you.
That's very much what Mr. Christie was saying last night, too.
It's accountability. If you foul yourself up, you need to be accountable for what you did wrong. And if you don't think you're wrong, then you need to defend yourself and explain why.
That's right.
David, I don't think I explained to you why Matt is here. Matt is the managing editor of the Arizona Capital Times.
I know that.
Okay, and we've done this last year and this year, and it's a lot of fun. Matt's a regular on our show, and we talk about Arizona politics and hold people's feet to the fire sometimes, at least on the radio. We don't physically confront them, but
I wouldn't confront you, no. But
No.
I have a lot of things to say about Arizona politics. There are some politicians I like. There are some politicians I do not like. And then there are some politicians I wish they would send to Mexico. Not saying who, of course.
Right, of course, you're right.
Well, let me ask you one question. This is a question that I'm going to ask all of the candidates that are here today. And it has to do with the fact that there are so many more baby boomers now starting to move into Sun City.
Yes, that's true.
They have different needs and different ideas of what retirement looks like and what it is, and it's certainly different than, as I was saying to somebody else, my parents and quite possibly yours. What do you propose, or what do you think the Homeowners Association can do to make the shift in the retirement style going to the baby boomers than what it was, the guys in plaid shorts and multi-striped pants playing golf on the golf course and picking up oranges and fruit in the medians, and that was a sense of their retirement. What do you think the baby boomers...
What do I think of the situation?
Yeah.
Well, it is obvious that the younger folks are much different. I'm considered a baby here in Sun City. I'm 66. I was very lucky to be able to retire early. Notwithstanding that, the newer people are used to a much different lifestyle. It was faster paced. It was more electronic. It was more high pressure. I think they're going to have to learn to relax a bit. I know I did when I came here. And that is what we need to start with. I'm not an expert in sociology, but I would say the rec center, the homeowners association, needs to canvas these people. What are you looking for? Because if they put in a computer center that nobody wants or an electronic game center that nobody wants, that's a waste of time and money. The computer club I know is quite busy. I was there for a year, but I ran my own computer business for 11 years, and it was, something that was very nice, but... So that's what's going on. A lot of the people now are in their 70s and 80s here in Sun City. Perhaps they should give an advanced driving course to some people, either young or old. I've seen and read accident stories here in Sun City, and it's tragic. People live all their lives and are not paying attention, and they wind up either seriously injured or dead. It was a couple of weeks ago, lady was crossing the street, guy runs her over. Eventually, I read in the newspaper, he didn't realize she was there. There are things that will become
necessary. But as far as these new people do, what we need to do are two things. One, find out where they're from, and two, what they were really interested in.
I thought you were going to say send them back.
No, I don't think so. I'm from New Jersey. I lived in Pennsylvania most of my life, and I'm so happy here. It was 1980 that I first came here. And here I am, and I'm very happy here.
Well, it's interesting you say that. We've had on our show Paul Herman, who's the executive director of the Visitor Center, and we've had Bill Pearson. Matter of fact, Paul.
Yeah, I know Bill and Pearson.
Paul has a show on the Boomer and the Babe Network on Blog Talk, and he had Bill Pearson as his guest, and they were having a lot of discussion about how happy people are to be living in Sun City and how fortunate they feel to be able to live here.
I am, too. You know, I'm not at the stage in life where I need my arts and crafts to keep me busy. There are a lot of other things I do. I've become involved in politics. I've become involved in organizations and helping with leadership. So I'm leading a very active, informed, wonderful life.
Well, good. Well, thanks, David, for stopping by and visiting with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate the time and effort.
And good luck
in
the election.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Have a good day,
gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you. You too.
We have another victim standing
right
by.
Here.
Okay. Why don't you step in here, sir?
Get out and break a leg.
Have a seat. We're going through the list of candidates that are here to talk to them on the election, and so I'll just have a seat there, and we'll get right to it.
Pardon me, my knees don't work too
well. Oh, that's okay. Not a problem.
You may have that trouble.
This is Tom Beeson, is it?
Yes.
Tom Beeson, a candidate for Sun City Homeowners Association Board.
Correct.
We start out by asking a little of your background, Tom. Where do you hail from? What have you done in the past, and how long have you been in Sun City?
Moved to Sun City in 1996.
Okay.
I retired and moved out here. My background, I graduated from Missouri State, or Southwest Missouri State, in 65. I taught high school and junior high for 5 years and was starving to death. And went to the University of Missouri to work on my master's. And things transpired, and I had to go back to Springfield, Missouri area. And was there for a while taking care of my father. And along the way, I started playing professional tennis. And I played on the tour. That's probably why my knees are bad.
That'll do it.
Yeah. And as part of that, I became friends with a gentleman by the name of Arthur Ashe. I don't know if you remember him.
I do remember the name. Absolutely. Never met the gentleman. But.
And I was running a tennis country club in Milwaukee. And I was there for 6 years. I went from there to a big resort in Georgia called Big Canoe, which was almost 8,000 acres. I was general manager, and we got bought out. And about that time, Arthur Ashe's agent called me, and he said, Arthur's got a tennis country club in Potomac, Maryland, and he remembers you from the tour and wants to know if you'd come up and take a look at it, which I did, and they hired me. And I was there for 6 years. And in that time, Arthur had passed away. I don't know if you remember, but he did. And they sold the club, or his agent sold the club. And I got a phone call from a guy by the name of Swee Simon. He had the biggest health club in the world, 600,000 square feet. And he had about 5,000 members. And he wanted to know if I could come over and take a look and see about running, which I did do. And then about that time, I was there for 3 years. Mr. Simon bought a resort in Bethesda, Maryland, and I took it over, and I was there for 3 years. And I left there, and became general manager of a country club in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And I was there for 6 years and left there and went to a country club in Jackson, Tennessee. And about that time, both my mother and father were sick, and I just said, I think it's time for me to retire, and I moved out here.
Well, you certainly have a wealth of management experience.
I have done that.
How do you feel that that experience in management is going to benefit you if you're elected to the board?
Well, first of all, you know I've already served on the board. I served on the homeowners board for approximately 3 years,
mm-hmm.
and I also served on the board over at the Condo Owners Association for 2 years, and then I was 1 year as their public relations director, and I was president of my condo association for 4 years. I don't live in a condo anymore, but I feel like that I have a lot of experience knowing what transpired here, and I do know a lot what transpired and why did we do things certain ways. And the main thing I would like to see is various boards being more consistent, because if we have one board that comes along and says, okay, we're going to do this, 2 years later, another board comes along and says, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do something else. I think they need to know why we did that to start with.
You're talking board to board to board,
yes,
as it progresses.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I'm asking this one question to all of the candidates, and that is, with the influx of baby boomers,
yep,
coming into Sun City,
yep,
having what I perceive as different needs and certainly different ideas,
mm-hmm.
What do you think the Sun City Homeowners Association board of directors can do to accommodate those newbies, if you will?
Well, a lot of the newbies are still working. And one of the things that I would like to see happen is that a lot of people in Sun City don't get involved in helping organizations in Sun City. And my wife, who is president of SCAT Dollar Ride, is having kind of that same problem. People just aren't getting involved. So I think that's the main thing that we need to have done.
Let's try to get the boomers involved,
yes,
a little bit more.
Right. Yep.
Very good.
Well, I'm a political editor, but I the only thing I've been interested in this entire time, not the only thing I've been interested in, the thing that's been going through my head this entire time, is you got to tell me a story of when you were on the tour. Something. You knew Arthur Ashe. I mean, good Lord, this is...
beat Jimmy Connors.
You played and beat Jimmy Connors.
Where and when?
Yeah, and you got to tell us the story now.
All right, I'll tell you. Is this on tape?
Oh, this is all live on tape. Yeah,
live, yeah.
He was 13.
And how old were you, 22?
Yeah, I was about 20. But I played Butch Buckholz, Stan Smith, of course, Arthur, and I.
You played against Arthur, right?
Yeah. Tom and Tim Gullickson, one of which has passed away. Beat one, got beat by the other one. I was good enough to get into the tournament, and I might win a round or two. I'd make enough money to go on to the next tournament. But I wasn't good enough to go all the way.
But you're good enough to enjoy that lifestyle.
Actually, I did. I really did. I was highly ranked, but it was just fun, and I was single, so, you know, it was just fun.
Well, that's got to beat most of the stories that people would tell around here, I got to say. That's pretty good.
Well, he wasn't too old.
Well, just being on the tour, I mean, good Lord, that's amazing in itself. I had a friend of mine who played on the PGA Tour for a little while, and I thought that was something, but
yeah.
He wasn't he didn't play against the likes of Arthur Ashe or anything like that.
Well, you know, of course I got beat by Arthur Ashe.
Well, a lot of people did.
I got beat by an awful lot of people, but I knew him. What was his name? Roscoe Tanner. Played him. I think he's in jail now.
Is he really?
Well, they got him for tax evasion.
Here's what I remember about Roscoe Tanner. When there was the
TPA maybe is what it was. They had a team
mm-hmm.
a team events going
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
And Roscoe Tanner played for the team in San Diego, I believe.
Might have.
And I lived in San Diego, and I remember Roscoe Tanner's wife, and she would be very hard to forget.
Oh, really?
Oh, she was gorgeous. It was absolutely gorgeous.
I will tell you, most of the tennis players
and the golfers
You can call them camp followers, but they were there.
Well, I'm going to tell you one story, and then I know we've got to let you go. But we had a case where I used to have a golf magazine, golf newspaper, and I would cover the seniors tour and the PGA tour in the Southwest. And one of the people that we covered was Lee Trevino, of course, at the one of the original some of the original Skins games over in the desert, Palm Desert. And somebody asked Lee Trevino where he met his nice, lovely, new, young wife. And Lee Trevino said, I opened my wallet, and there she was.
He's something.
He's a piece of work.
I put on a Pro-Am golf tournament in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And we had Trevino and some other people there. Well, Fuzzy Zeller. The year after Fuzzy Zeller got in trouble.
Well, I got a Fuzzy Zeller stories also, but I can't tell them on the air. I played golf in '84 in the Pro-Am with Fuzzy Zeller in San Diego.
Are you kidding?
I am not kidding. I got the pictures and the plaque to prove it.
Well, you know what? Lee Trevino and Fuzzy Zeller were so congenial.
Yes.
They went around to every... We had a men's golf breakfast before. They went around to every table. They talked to everybody.
Yes.
Some of the other golfers, and I won't mention names. Nothing.
I'm sure you do, I have myriad of golf stories of these pros, and some of them are very complimentary, and others they certainly wouldn't want me to tell them.
Now, I put on a golf tournament in Big Canoe, and this was, remember Kyle Rote?
Yes. Okay. Senior or junior?
Senior.
Senior, football player.
Yeah.
Right.
He had a company called Legends of Sports.
Okay.
And we hired him to bring a bunch of these guys in. And there were football players and basketball players. And a couple of the limousines pulled up, and they had to pour some of these guys out of the limousines.
I know. Unbelievable. Well, Tom, thanks for stopping by and visiting with us. Good luck in the election.
Well, thank you.
When you cast your vote, cast it as a bullet vote just for yourself.
My wife won't let me vote.
She doesn't want you on the board.
There it is, yeah. Yeah.
Thanks again. Do you know if there are any other candidates
no.
around? Just the
no.
three of you? Well, then we're wrapping it up with Mr. Tom Beeson.
Rick Ray couldn't come. He had other
right.
commitments.
That's right.
The man we didn't mention earlier, Rick
yeah.
Ray.
And I don't know what happened to the other candidate.
Bill was saying that he didn't know if he was going to be able to make it, so we don't know, actually.
I don't know.
Well, thanks for your time. I appreciate
you
coming by.
My pleasure, Tom.
Nice
to meet you.
Hope
Take
my
care.
Knees work together.
I hope so, too. Thanks again. Well, Matt, local is local. Like I said before, we can't get much more local than this, can we?
You know, I used to talk about covering local politics, and it was always city councils and county commissioners and things like that. You're right, this is far more local than any of that ever was, I'll say that.
It really is.
And we got to meet somebody who played tennis against Arthur Ashe.
Isn't that amazing?
Good Lord, I'm going to go find out, and I'm going to go have to do a Wikipedia search on Tom Beeson and find out about this guy.
There you go. Well, one of the things I wanted to discuss with you, and let's just have this one little thing before we wrap it up, and that is, other than the Capital Times, and with all these promises that these new candidates to the State House made, who's going to hold their feet to the fire? Who's going to hold them accountable for their promises?
Well, you know, it's got to come down to people, you know. I mean, we can't, you know, I can't think of any one group or any one entity that can do anything to hold these folks to the feet of the fire. You know, the media needs to do its job and be fair and let everybody know exactly what's going on. But, you know, the public needs to get interested. And I think they are interested. It's a matter of finding the time to turn that interest into actual knowledge. And I really hope people pay attention to what's going on down at the legislature. It's going to affect them. I mean, it's affecting us now, what's going on. You know, everything that they do down there, it seems like it's just all, you know, in some bubble down on West Washington Street in downtown Phoenix. But it affects everybody across the state. I just think we need to really pay attention and watch what our, you know, if you're from, you know, rural Arizona, you know, it's hard to pay attention. But if you can just watch those three people that you vote into the legislature every year, you know, just pay attention to those three and see how they vote. You know, that's enough. At least you'll be making informed decisions when you guys send, you know, representatives down there next time. You know, other than that, I mean, that's the line of defense, is the public. I mean, you got lobbyists down here, you got special interests of all sorts and stripes, and you got the media trying to do its best, but you got, you know, it's all it'll all fall apart without the people paying attention.
It's all up to the people that pull the lever or punch the ballot or whatever the means are.
That's right.
You've got to be able to do it yourself and be willing to take the time to do it.
That's right.
I mean, if you took the time to vote, now you should take the time to follow up.
I agree.
And see what's going on. Well, as always, Matt, it's always a pleasure to have you here. We always enjoy talking to you, as you know, about Arizona politics and a little local along the way thrown in. We'll see if we can maybe even do this again next year.
Hey,
it's always fun.
It's becoming a tradition now.
It is. So, yeah, it is. Yeah. A boomer and a babe tradition.
That's right.
And do this. So thanks again for being with us today. You've been listening to the Boomer the Vape Show on Blog Talk Radio in Phoenix, Arizona, where we bring good conversation to the world. Today we brought you information and conversation with Matt Funch of the Arizona Capital Times, also the three candidates for board of directors here at the Sun City Homeowners Association, and Mr. Bill, the general manager. His last name, and he gave it to me phonetically. Remember that we do much more than just host this show on the Boomer the Babe on Blog Talk. We also publish ebooks, publish free online magazines. So go to boomerthebabe.com, see everything that makes up the Boomer the Babe enterprises, and be sure to make the second half of your life the best half of your life. And we'll talk to you again next week. Have a great weekend, everybody.
You've been listening to the Boomer the Babe Show, where we bring interesting conversation to the world. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, where we tweet as Boomer and Babe, and on Facebook as Pete Peters 47. As always, you can friend us on Blog Talk Radio or sign up for our newsletter at boomerandthebabe.com. Email us at host@boomerthebabe.com with any of your comments. Remember, at 50, you're just getting started.